Welcome to ACC Nation. Our special guest on this episode of the podcast is the founder and managing editor of AllSportsDiscussion.com, with roots at Clemson and Georgia Tech. And if you're not careful, he'll have you wired up in no time at all. It's Jeff Fan. Welcome, sir.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Thank you for joining us on ACC Nation to talk about a bit more in detail the Ramblin' Wreck, Georgia Tech. Let's scratch the surface a little bit here. Your impression of the overall health and direction of the athletic program at Georgia Tech?
I would say it's in better condition than what it was 2 or 3 years ago, but it's still got a long way to go. A couple of years ago, Todd Stansberry, a former Georgia Tech football player, was hired as a AD, and he was replacing Mike Babinski, who was from Xavier. And basically, Babinski was a disaster as an AD at Georgia Tech. There are stories that he was never around the athletic department. He had a nickname, I think it was like the Abominable Snowman or something, because he was so rarely seen around there, something to that effect, or Bigfoot. I can't quite remember the story. And he wasn't very popular there. There are other stories when Georgia Tech and the football team went to Ireland for their game against Boston College. There were stories about how Babinski tried to put him on an extremely cheap flight, and that really angered Paul Johnson. And there's all kinds of stories about Babinski doing that as he was AD. Now, Stansberry comes in, and he's immediately a better fundraiser than the previous AD. They had the locker rooms are brand new. That was one of Stansberry's first initiatives for the football team. There's a major fundraising campaign going on to try to improve the facilities. Georgia Tech's trying to catch up to the rest of the conference, and that's put them behind the eight ball in a lot of their athletics programs. But I think Stansberry is the right guy for Georgia Tech to have. And I think you're already starting to see the fruits of some of his work. The fundraising is going pretty well, as I understand. And, you know, I think you'll start to see a recovery in their athletic programs over the next 2 to 4 years.
Okay, so since we're looking at personnel, let's look at Josh Pastner. Great first year, kind of fallen off a little bit the last couple of years, but was he a good hire to start?
I think it was a hopeful hire. They didn't really have the money to go after some of the bigger names they wanted. I think he was, you know, eighth or ninth choices for Georgia Tech, but he was young. He'd had some success at Memphis. It didn't end very well there. Memphis fans weren't sorry to see Pastner go. So I think Georgia Tech fans looked at it like, okay, I hope what was good about Pastner, that he could recruit. They were hoping he would come in, be able to recruit at Georgia Tech. And that really hasn't paid off. So I think it was kind of a nervous hire, a hopeful hire. But in my opinion, it hasn't panned out the way they had hoped it was going to.
What has he brought to the table that was missing with, like, Brian Gregory?
Initially, he brought in some enthusiasm. He did things with the students. I think, surprisingly, he's done a better job with X's and O's than Gregory did. With Gregory, there were a lot of defensive lapses. He actually recruited better than Pastner. So I think, you know, from an X's and O's standpoint, he's done a better job than Gregory. And most didn't expect Pastner to be that good as a bench coach. Most expected he would be a recruiter and hoped he would grow into that. But it's kind of been the other way around. The team is honestly not very talented, and he's been able to at times, you know, milk the team into being competitive against teams they really shouldn't be. They had some upsets the first couple of years with some top 15 wins at home. He won 8 games his first year. But once the talent level started declining and he wasn't able to really fill it back up through recruiting, it's almost as if there's nothing he can really do on the bench, because the teams that he's playing against, the talent discrepancy is just too big. But from time to time, you do see a win that kind of surprises you, especially with the variety of defenses he plays. They won at Arkansas earlier this year. They had a pretty stunning win at Syracuse, but overall, they're really struggling.
Yeah, Pastner said that he feels like this team is one good player away from what he considers to be this team to be clicking. When I watch Georgia Tech, it feels like he needs more than one player, and that's especially on offense. What are your thoughts?
I think you're right. I think if he had one quality perimeter shooter, it might make a difference in two or three of the games. Georgia Tech is atrocious from the perimeter. They have no consistency. But to be an NCAA caliber team, like you said, Will, I think they're two or three players short. One perimeter player would probably get them at least to the NIT, but if they really wanted to compete in the upper half of the ACC, they probably need two or three more players and guys who are more natural scorers. I mean, the team gives good effort. They try. It's not about that. And I think Pastner does what he can by mixing up the defenses, but they're really at least a couple players short of having a couple natural scorers out there, slashers to the basket. That's just a type of player they don't have on that team right now.
Jeff, this is a young team. I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's only two seniors on the roster. Are the young guys showing the kind of improvement that is putting a glimmer of hope into the eyes of the fans?
I think if there's one player that can give Georgia Tech a little bit of hope, it's the DeVoe kid who plays guard. He's the highest rated recruit that Pastner's had. He was a top 50 player, and he was injured early in the year, which kind of slowed his development. But you're starting to see the type of player that he is. He's starting to knock down a three. He has a lot of ball handling responsibility. He's the kind of player that if you want to have hope, and you know, NCAA tournament teams, And the better basketball team is always really good in the backcourt. With him and Alvarado's only a sophomore, and DeVoe is a freshman. If they continue to develop, there's a chance that Georgia Tech could be better next year. They still need a couple of other guys, like Curtis Haywood, who was supposed to be a sharpshooter there at the three-point range. He's really struggled this year. But if you're looking at a couple starting guards with Alvarado and DeVoe, especially DeVoe, who's come along lately, there is a chance that they could be decent next year.
Well, let's get a little further into Alvarado. He is leading the team in points, assists, steals. Now, when he's having an off night, so is the team in a big way. Development-wise, where do you see him now, and where do you see him in the future?
I think as the floor general, he does a pretty good job. If he had a couple of more complimentary players, like Will was talking about earlier, he would be a really quality point guard. Now, he's a good player. He's a good player. But right now, there's too much on him. There's too much scoring burden on Alvarado right now, and it's showing up in his perimeter shooting. He's shooting worse than he did last year, but I think as a floor general, he's come along. He's distributing the ball, but he's taking on too much of the scoring load. If they can find, if DeVoe continues to develop and he can take more of that, you know, pure point guard role, I think he has a chance to be one of those, you know, you see them in the NCAA tournament all the time, those little bit undersized mid-major type point guards that just tear up teams by the time they're a senior. And Alvarado is that kind of player. You know, he's probably not going to be an NBA point guard, but he's good enough that in another year or two, I mean, he's definitely an ACC caliber type player, but he needs to work on that outside shot. And I think part of that is because he's had too much scoring burden on him.
So we talked about team leaders, and let's get into James Banks. He's been, you know, with the graduation of Ben Lammers last year, we're looking at somebody who might be the cog of the defense, and it's clearly been him. He leads the team in rebounding by a wide margin. He's up amongst the league leaders in block shots. How critical of a cog is he?
If he wouldn't have got that transfer approved for this year, Georgia Tech would probably have maybe 5 or 6 wins this year. He's actually been better than I expected. I know he didn't put up huge numbers at Texas, and I almost thought he would come in and, you know, struggle a little bit as he got into the offense, and he's been inconsistent. That's probably his biggest knock on him. But when he plays well, or when he's definitely on his game, I mean, he can hold his own against most of the big men in the ACC. I mean, he's definitely a talented guy. You know, he's very important, and that's another reason why Georgia Tech might have at least some chance to be decent next year, because he'll be back, Alvarado will be back, DeVoe will be back. I think what Georgia Tech fans are hoping is to start seeing that some of that towards the end of this year. There's not going to be any postseason for them this year, but right now they're going in the wrong direction. But Banks is a player I like, and he's been a good addition to the team.
Jim said earlier there's only two seniors on the roster. One of them is Brandon Alston, who's missed a few games this year, but he's still been kind of the veteran presence of this team. And who might take over his role next year once he graduates?
I would say the USC transfer, Jordan Usher. He was a top 100 player and is transferring in from USC, and they're really looking at the UNC transfer to come in and provide additional scoring. He was averaging 8 or 9 points a game at USC, and he's the kind of guy that could maybe fill that the role that Alston is going to lead. Because, Alston, he's a decent player. I think, given his skill set, he does what he can, but he does provide a little scoring here and there. But the USC transfer is the guy they're probably looking for to fill that in the near term, because they really won't have anyone coming in from their recruiting class. And that's something else that I could ramble on about. The recruiting class for Josh Pastner this year was a complete disaster. They're hoping to get someone in the late signing period, but I don't really think it's very likely that they'll find someone that can contribute real soon. I would say the USC transfer is the guy they're looking at who can fill in some scoring, replace a guy like Alston.
You talked about a disaster on the recruiting front, Jeff, and let's ramble a little bit here. Let's talk about what's going on. Why did we come up short here with recruiting, and how is that going to be repaired?
That's a great question. That's probably the question of the day when it comes to Georgia Tech basketball. Is how are they going to fix the recruiting? Because Pastner came in, his reputation was as a recruiter, and it's just not panned out at all. DeVoe was his best get, top 50 player. Alvarado was a good find. He was just outside the top 100, a high three-star kid out of New York, and he was a little under the radar, and that was a pretty good find by Pastner. But overall, I mean, he signed a lot of kids who are projects, who really aren't ACC caliber type players. Maybe they will be in a couple of years. Right now his only commit is a junior college Euro player who is averaging 5 points a game. And there's some discussion that they may even pull his offer because the kid's struggling so much. I really don't know how he can fix this, because when you watch Georgia Tech play, the style of offense, it's hard to watch. They're not really a transition team. I mean, if I'm a recruit, you're looking at them and you're like, do I really want to play in that offense? Of course, he can offer early playing time, and any highly rated kid would probably start for them. But it's tough because now kids, it's hard to bring that, because now kids can go anywhere and start right away. I mean, look what they do at Duke, at Kentucky. It doesn't matter if you're a freshman and you're good, you can play. So it's really hard to see what Pastner can offer them. I mean, he's even losing out on Jordan, kids from Georgia right now. The University of Georgia just signed a five-star player, Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was grades or what, but Georgia Tech wasn't even anywhere on the radar screen, as far as I know. Part of what happened, though, and which may give them some more of a chance going into the next year's class, is that there's been a lot of staff turnover for Pastner. And one of his assistants, Daryl LeBerry, a former Georgia Tech player, was one of his bigger recruiters, is no longer on the staff. And he had a good bit of turnover in this last cycle. So maybe through this next year, he can build up some relationships. I mean, they've had some players on campus, some higher rated kids going into 2020. But right now, none of them have committed. You know, just have to wait and see if having a little more staff continuity can get some players in for 2020. Because honestly, it's Pastner's job. It depends on this. I'm putting in a recruiting class, because if he doesn't sign some quality kids for next year, he's finished. I mean, you just can't compete in the ACC with basically a mid-major talent level. And, you know, you've got Duke and you've got Virginia and North Carolina, and Louisville is just signed a top five class. I mean, you simply can't compete if you can't recruit in the ACC.
It's a very difficult road for an awful lot of schools in the ACC. They have all their own special challenges. I'm looking at Atlanta, and I keep thinking to myself, geez, this has got to be a really rich recruiting ground. It hasn't always been that way for Georgia Tech, and I always scratch my head over that. But let's look outside of Atlanta for a second. What has been a really rich, fertile ground for recruiting, geographically speaking?
Well, historically, they've had some good success recruiting the New York area. You know, that's where Kenny Anderson came from. It's where Alvarado came from. I mean, I would say, historically speaking, they've had some success up there. Other than that, I'm not sure there's really too many other geographic reasons where they've kind of, you know, locked in. You know, they tend to stay in the Southeast, and, you know, there should be players in the state of Georgia they should be able to recruit. But maybe if the one area outside of the Atlanta and Southeast that they've had some historical success is the New York area.
I'll ask you about the defense for a second. They've been one of the surprising stories of the league this year. They're, according to KenPom, they're sitting at 12th nationally in adjusted efficiency, 8th in effective field goal percentage, or 6th in three-point percentage defense. How surprised are you as to how well this team has played defensively?
That has been a little bit surprising, because you see normally the better defensive teams are either extremely athletic and can recover, you know, anywhere on the court, or they've played together a while and they really know the schemes of the coach. And on that, I'd give Pastner a pretty good grade on getting his team to buy in defensively really quickly. And like I said earlier, Pastner likes to mix defenses up, and that hasn't really seemed to affect, you know, their overall defensive statistics by switching up so often. And I think, and you know, that might be some of the problem. I mean, he might be trying to expend so much time and effort on the defense, they're struggling offensively, or maybe he recognizes he doesn't really have a very, very talented offensive team that he's devoting so much time to the defense. But I have been a little bit surprised that they have been that good on defense. I mean, they've gotten Duke into some really low scoring games. They had Syracuse struggling in that big win. So for the most part, they've been pretty solid on defense, and it has been a little bit surprising with some of the new parts they had on the team.
So let's switch over to football now. We've come to the end of the Paul Johnson era. What was your initial reaction when you heard of his departure? And it kind of came as a surprise to me, because I thought he was still going to be going for a while yet.
I was definitely surprised. I was a little bit disappointed, to be honest. I liked Paul Johnson. I liked the triple option. I think it gave Georgia Tech a unique identity. It gave them a chance to compete against teams that were more talented than they were. And I was hopeful, especially with the new AD, and we talked about that at the beginning of the podcast, is I really wanted to see, you know, what Paul Johnson could do with an AD that really got behind football, really invested in facilities, increased the support staff. And because we know at the beginning when Paul Johnson was there, and he had some NFL players at the beginning of his tenure when he won all those games his first couple of years under the triple option. And it wasn't that many years ago in 2014 when he won the Orange Bowl, he had some pretty good talent on the team. And I wanted to see what he could do with real support from his AD. So I was a little bit surprised and a little bit disappointed that I wasn't able to see what he could do there.
The new coach, Jeff Collins, he's still a relatively young guy, and he comes over from Temple after keeping up what Matt Rhule had done over there. He's obviously starting to win over his fans because of his love of Waffle House, but what else does he bring to Atlanta?
I think the first thing that he brought was that he wasn't Ken Wisenhunt.
Yeah.
When that started up, that Wisenhunt was the first choice of Stansberry, and that they played together, Georgia Tech fans were pretty much unified that they didn't want Wisenhunt to be there. Maybe 10 years ago, it would have been okay, but that was the first win of Jeff Collins tenure is that he wasn't Wisenhunt. So there was a great deal of relief with the Georgia Tech fan base when Collins was named. But still, you know, he had coached at Temple. He had a pretty good coaching pedigree being at Florida and Alabama and then head coach at Temple. I think he even spent some time in Mississippi State, was a former grad assistant at Georgia Tech. I think, you know, there was still a little bit of a wait and see, you know, what would he do with his first recruiting class? Georgia Tech fans were pleasantly surprised, I would say, by how he kept the Paul Johnson core of the recruiting class together. I think he only lost three commits from the Paul Johnson group. And he went out and signed, you know, his biggest get was Jameis Griffin, a running back out of Rome, Georgia, who was a four-star running back. It was a NC State committed player, got him to decommit. And this was the Gatorade player of the year in the state of Georgia. And these were the kind of kids that were leaving or not committing to Georgia Tech. You know, they were going to Georgia, or they were going to the Auburns and Tennessees and Clemsons, and they were leaving, if not leaving the state, you know, going to Georgia, for example. And so this was the kind of recruit that a lot of Georgia Tech fans had their eye on. You know, could he land this kid, you know, Jameis Griffin? And they were, I mean, this might be his most important commit of his entire class. And when he got him to commit, there was a feeling among the Georgia Tech fan base, okay, this guy is going to increase the talent level at Georgia Tech. You still have to wait and see if he wins and loses, but he's all over social media. He's out there, you know, with the Waffle House thing, like you said, Will. He's in the Waffle House helicopter, and you know, Waffle House has a lot of ties to Georgia Tech. It's either their CEO or one of their, you know, senior executives is a Georgia Tech grad. So, I mean, it's really smart what Collins is doing. He's really trying to brand Georgia Tech and the city of Atlanta. The recruits are on billboards outside the city. So I think for his first couple months on the job, I don't know if it could have went better for Collins. I mean, he put a solid class together, got some highly rated guys in, and now we'll just see how he does the rest of the time. But it's been pretty good, I would say, for what Collins has done at the beginning. I think most Georgia Tech fans are pretty pleased with him so far.
All right, I'm going to throw out four names: Lucas Johnson, Tobias Oliver, James Graham, Jordan Yates. If you're going to project a starting quarterback, which one of those four would you like to see?
Graham probably came in the highest rated. I think it was either him or Johnson that was having the grades struggles. Yates had a great high school career. He was upgraded to a four-star on Rivals, and he won a state championship for his high school. I think he's the most intriguing because he kind of really came out of nowhere. And even though he was recruited into Paul Johnson's triple option program, I mean, he was the guy that Collins went out to his state title game just to go watch him play. And he was really heavy into bringing Griffin to Georgia Tech. So I think he's the most intriguing. Oliver, I think, he's going to end up at another position. While he had some really great games with running the option in relief of Marshall, I don't know if he has the arm to run the system that Collins wants to run. So of the four, I think Oliver is the least likely to end up the starting quarterback. Johnson and Graham, I think, are definitely going to be in the mix. And I think Yates is going to be there too. I think in the end, it'll probably be Johnson or Graham starting for Georgia Tech. And I think Yates will be in the picture, but I'm not sure he'd start a freshman in their first game, especially going on the road at Clemson. You may see Yates later. I think it's going to be hard to really tell beyond maybe Oliver not playing until we see something out of the spring game. So really have to look forward to the spring game to start getting a really good picture on the quarterback situation. I think the only thing we can really be sure of is it probably won't be Tobias Oliver.
All right, so we're looking at the ACC as getting much more competitive on the field, and we're seeing that as your other school, Clemson, is the now defending national champion as we head into 2019. We saw, you know, Virginia shut out South Carolina in their bowl game, and we're seeing new coaches now. We've mentioned Collins, Manny Diaz at Miami, new schemes, and it just seems like a much better overall conference now. What are your overall thoughts on how Georgia Tech fits into all this?
It's all going to depend on if Collins can turn this early momentum into a really strong 2020 class. I think, especially being in the Coastal, you know, you don't have to compete against Clemson, even though they do have to play them every year. But there's, you know, there's more opportunity for upward mobility in the Coastal than in the Atlantic. I mean, we saw,
that's for sure.
You know, yeah. You know, we saw Pittsburgh just win the Coastal Division title, and, you know, they had some good moments, but that wasn't a great team, you know, if we're being honest. So I think there's an opportunity for Georgia Tech if they can really develop that talent base and recruit over the next couple of years. I mean, it's going to be a transitional period, but the Coastal is not that good. You know, Miami's, like you said, is going to be rebuilding under Diaz. There's going to be opportunities for Georgia Tech over the next 2 or 3 years to have a chance and contend in the Coastal. I mean, they're going to have that opportunity. We just have to see how Collins does on the field. I mean, there's a lot of excitement with how they think he's going to be able to recruit.
I want to stick to the offense for just a second. And you're going, you know, from such a unique offense to college football nowadays with the triple option to something a little more to what you would classify as normal. Is it going to be something he kind of gradually transitions into, or is he going to go straight to what he wants to run right away?
From some of the quotes I've seen from the offensive coaches and from Collins himself, I don't think he's going to go straight to everything he wants to run. It sounds like he's going to try to fit the offense at least somewhat around the offensive personnel that he has. I mean, he's not going to have a lot of wide receivers are used to catching the ball. A lot of these running backs, you know, Georgia Tech's going to have a bunch of them are going to be playing like slot receiver. So I think you're going to probably see a little bit more RPO out of the offense this upcoming year than you would in the future. And like we talked about with the quarterbacks, with the exception, I still believe exception of Oliver, you know, they were brought in under an option offense. So I think you're going to see them run a little bit more here in the next year or two than Georgia Tech might 3 years from now. So I think you're still going to see a pretty fair amount of run, and everything that Collins wants to run, I think it'll still be a couple of years away. He's got to recruit the kind of linemen he wants. You know, the linemen that Paul Johnson had are in that 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", type range, and they're usually around, you know, 280, 285, 290, maybe even 300. And you know, they're built for run blocking, and Collins wants guys that are going to be 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", type players and a little bit over 300 pounds, you know, the 300, 310, 320 type guys who are a little more effective in pass blocking. So I think it'll be 2 to 3 years before he really gets the offense the way he wants. You'll see a little bit more, you know, running and the run pass option stuff. That's what I think you'll end up seeing a lot of this year.
Is a bowl game realistic this year?
I think that it is. You know, you open the season with Clemson. Yeah, that's likely to be a loss. And you end the season with Georgia, probably going to be a loss too. But, in between, I think you can find a way to get to 6 wins and get to a bowl game. There is some, you know, returning experience on the defensive side of the ball. I think there's some talent there on offense. I mean, it wasn't like Georgia Tech had bad football players. They just got to, you know, find their new positions under the Collins offense. I think a bowl game is possible. I think they can find their way to 6 games. You know, their Coastal Division opponents aren't going to, you know, just overwhelm. You know, there's no one in the Coastal that's going to just overwhelm. I think, you know, Virginia should be pretty good as the team I'm looking at in the Coastal. But I think Georgia Tech can get to a bowl game this year.
Your check is in the mail, sir. But I do think that's right. I do think Virginia is the favorite, and I'm not blowing smoke either. But do you have any other sports that you really like or teams outside of college?
Well, I definitely play like fantasy football, but I'm not sure if I really have an NFL team except maybe the Panthers or the Atlanta Falcons. But mostly I'm just rooting for the players on my fantasy teams when it comes to that. NBA the same way. I mean, I like watching it, but I don't really have a team that I'm really following unless I have fantasy players on it. I'm really a college sports fan, basketball, football, and I'll even watch college baseball, some women's basketball too. I enjoy that.
So before we wrap up, why don't you go ahead and plug all your social medias? Obviously, I've been a follower of yours for a number of years, but some people may be just listening to you for the first time. So feel free to plug all your website, social media, and all that.
Yeah, you can find me. The blog is allsportsdiscussion.com. The Twitter account for me is Talkin' ACC Sports. We have a Twitter account called AllSportsDACC that I manage, and on my blog partner, Matthew, that you'll have on your podcast, I think, later. He also helps with that. And we have our podcast on Sundays. And just stay on the lookout for it. And I'm a frequent person on Twitter talking about ACC games.
Awesome. Well, that's Jeffrey Phan, founder and managing editor of AllSportsDiscussion.com. And Jeff has been our guest on ACC Nation. Thanks, Jeff, and we'll hope you join us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.